Welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm Laura Dierda, an editor at Becker's Healthcare, and I'm thrilled to welcome Dr. Chris Dale, Chief Quality Officer at Swedish in Seattle, and Chris Clearfield, who is the CEO of System Logic and co-author of Meltdown, Why Our Systems Failed and What We Can Do About It. Both Dr. Dale and Chris also co-authored a recent Harvard Business Review article titled How One Seattle Health System is Managing the COVID-19 Crisis. Dr. Dale and Chris, it's a pleasure to have you both on the podcast today.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
So, Dr. Dale, we'll start with you. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to. Yeah, so my name's Chris Dale. I'm a pulmonary and critical care physician. I still practice that, several weeks a year. And I'm a health services researcher also by background. I've been the chief quality officer at Swedish here in Seattle for the past 3 or so years.
Fantastic. And Chris, could you tell us a little bit about your experience and background as well?
Yeah, my background, I guess, is a little bit less straightforward. I am a researcher, writer, consultant. I study complexity, and I help leaders use curiosity to solve big problems in VUCA environments, so in volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous environments. And I wear a bunch of different hats doing that.
Well, fascinating. I think we'll have a really great discussion here today. And Dr. Dale, my first question is for you. Could you tell us a little bit about Swedish and a few points of pride, especially given the past year with the pandemic?
Well, it's been a crazy year. You know, COVID first actually came to light in America in Everett, which is just a little bit north of Seattle. And we were right at the forefront of the pandemic starting in March and went on the crazy ride that I think a lot of healthcare delivery systems across the nation went on. And we have really come together as an organization during this. I can't say enough good stuff around how our nurses and our providers have all just risen to meet this challenge, and how all different parts of the organization, from kind of materials management and all of our facilities teams to EVS to volunteers, have really risen to meet the challenge and continue to provide care during very difficult and uncertain times. So COVID's been a little trial by fire for us, but I think we've come through nicely.
Well, that's great to hear. And what are you seeing right now with the pandemic, and how are your strategies evolving for mitigating it?
Yeah, it's been an interesting last, 2 months. The early fall was actually pretty good here in Seattle in terms of inpatient volumes and circulating COVID cases in the community. And then, like a number of different places in the U.S., we saw an increase starting in mid to end of November, getting back to levels that were equal to what we saw back in April. And that's during this time just of, kind of this fatigue that's really set in. In April, it still was novel, and there's a lot of fear and uncertainty. And, maybe we can kind of touch on our approach to that a little bit later on. But now we have a better idea about actually how to treat the virus from kind of a biologic or medical perspective. But our teams have been going at this for 9 months, and I think people are just tired. And so we've really been kind of focused on how to maintain resilience and how to maintain caregiver well-being during these times. And then at the same time, we've had to pivot over the last month or so to vaccine distribution while we're fighting a pandemic. So it's kind of like fighting a battle on three fronts. One, just taking care of people with COVID. Two, maintaining the emotional well-being of our caregivers and the financial well-being of the organization. And three, being able to deliver a mass vaccination program in the middle of a pandemic. So it's been a challenging last couple months.
Absolutely. I can imagine on your front has just been one thing after another. And Chris, could you chime in here and talk a little bit about some of the complexities that you're seeing from a system standpoint and really, how you worked with Swedish to manage some of those complexities?
Well, I was really honored to be a thought partner with Chris Dale and Lynn Welling, who is another Swedish physician, and in helping them think about, just the aspect of so much is unknown. And I think you can hear that, and everyone has firsthand experience with that in the evolution of this pandemic. And so I think the important thing that I often go back to is in complex environments like the one we're facing, we often don't know the answers. And I think that's hard for a lot of, it's hard for a lot of leaders. I think it's probably hard for a lot of physicians. And so for me, the emphasis is so often on how do we create learning? How do we create a learning environment? And in particular, one that is learning that translates into action and learning that kind of translates into changing the way that we do things. Chris Argyris, who is a longtime researcher at Harvard Business School, talked about how kind of learning without action doesn't have much value. And I think that's so true in this moment we're in right now. And so then it becomes all about, you know, curiosity, experimentation, and frankly, feedback, you know, getting information on what's working and what's not working from the people who are observing it to the system itself. So you can kind of take those learnings and push them across the system.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And then either Chris or Dr. Dale, just one more question along those lines. Could you describe one or two learnings that you really feel like were emblematic of what you went through during that time, or were some of the most important things that you learned and were able to implement and were successful with?
Yeah, it's, I think actually Chris hit the nail on the head when he talked about really kind of those feedback loops, because it's been tremendously interesting to actually try to take a step back and, I don't know, metaphorically get to the balcony and look at the organization and how we're responding to this, you know, just unprecedented times for us, certainly, you know, like in, you know, in my professional lifetime. And one of the things that we started using with great effect towards the beginning of the pandemic were tiered huddles. So, you know, people have written about that a fair amount. You know, Intermountain's published on this about having tiered huddles starting at the local unit level and then going to departments and then to a campus level and up to a system as a whole, kind of a four-tier sort of thing. And we implemented those. We had those operating at kind of a campus level, but we hadn't connected them across our system yet before the pandemic. And when the pandemic started, we spun up our hospital incident command center, our HIC structure, very similar to how I understand a lot of other hospitals nationwide approached it. But we really focused on that feedback. I mean, one of the things we Swedish got introduced to Chris Clearfield by happenstance. And one of the things that he's written about is kind of the importance of understanding those feedback loops, because in very complex systems, you can go off in kind of crazy directions if you're not able to get information back in a timely way. And so when we set up these tiered huddles using our HIC structure, we really tried to be very deliberate around the reports out from the areas and templating things so that we could actually, we, the organization, could kind of sense it. Kevin Brooks, who's our COO, likes to term it like the organizational breathing. Like, we kind of breathe in information, kind of process it, and breathe it back out again. I guess as a pulmonologist, I'm not sure what I think with that metaphor. I should probably think about it more. But to me, it makes sense. Like, as a human, it's like, oh, we're breathing in and out, and the organization needs to have a rhythm, and that communication is such a large part of it. So that was, communication is one of our big learnings.
That's a great way to put it. Thank you so much. And now I wanted to turn and ask a question or two about vaccine distribution. I know that is a huge point of focus for everyone in the U.S. today, but especially health systems as they try to figure out how to vaccine or have their staff vaccinated as well as their entire communities. So what are some of the complexities of the systems for vaccine distribution, and how are you troubleshooting some of those potential issues?
Yeah, and I haven't actually connected with Chris Clearfield on this at all, so I'd be very interested in what he thinks about it kind of in real time. You know, we America knew that we were getting a vaccine, or we, the world, knew that we were getting a vaccine. What was really challenging for us here in Seattle was the mechanism of distribution was uncertain. And it's probably like an anticipatable problem that, you know, what if we're going to be producing vaccine at the rate of, you know, 10 million doses a week or whatever the rate, you know, is, we need to have distribution mechanisms such that we can get the vaccine into arms. And so vaccine began to arrive, and it became kind of, I always felt like we're kind of a couple steps behind in terms of our thinking. Like, we needed to be faster and more agile, where we were faced with the problem of, okay, we can vaccinate our own caregivers because we do that every year for a flu vaccine. And we kind of know how to do it. Like we run a, you know, flu vaccine clinics. And so that was the playbook that we were using. But it became very quickly apparent to us that playbook didn't work for a couple of different reasons. One, you know, there's so much pent up demand that kind of everybody and their brother wants a vaccine right now. Two, that it's a more complicated, you know, two different manufacturers, two different regimens, two different time courses that we had to account for. And three, that we didn't have the, you know, CVS's and Safeways and Walgreens of the world fully spun up yet. So that there's not a way that people who are eligible, and that's a moving target too, can go out and get the vaccine today. And so the delivery systems, at least in our local environment here in Washington State and in King and Snohomish counties, are a lot of the delivery vehicle for vaccine. And so, that was the problem that we were faced with. And I'd be very interested in what kind of Chris thinks about that, and just in terms of complexity theory and how we kind of take a step back and analyze it.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in. I think, you know, when to give the kind of 30-second overview of the theory that I kind of run my interventions from, it's really that there's two variables that matter. One is complexity, which in this case is really just the number of kind of interconnections, the number of moving pieces. And what Chris Dale just described is a system that is very complex. There are a lot of different moving pieces. And the other factor is a term that we've borrowed from other researchers called tight coupling, which is basically just how much of a buffer there is in your system. And I think that that's really the saving grace here in some sense that, you know, the difference between, well, first of all, part of the system is tightly coupled in that the vaccine needs to be, you know, stored at very cold temperatures, handled very carefully, it can't be out. So there is an element of this that's tightly coupled. I also think the time course of the dosing is something that I personally find a little bit concerning. So, you know, you've got your first dose, and then a couple of weeks later, you've got your second dose. Well, the thing that I'm curious about is, you know, how much tolerance is there, and how as supplies change and as challenges emerge, how many people are going to be much less effectively protected because they weren't able to get the second part of their vaccine in the appropriate time. So, you know, that's kind of the challenging news. I think the good news is that even though there's a lot of complexity, and even though we should expect to see these kind of strange, unexpected things happen. So like, you know, in West Virginia, the National Guard gave people some kind of, I think, antiviral treatment instead of the vaccine because they had happened to be, you know, shipped at the same time and stored in the same place and all of these things. And so those kind of small mistakes can have a big effect on the system. You know, I think the good news here is that all other things being equal, you know, the kind of difference between being vaccinated on a Thursday versus a Wednesday isn't a huge deal. The thing that I worry about is, you know, the kind of, does the supply chain come to a halt? You know, do we have vaccines in warehouses that aren't making it to where they are, or vaccines that do make it to where they are, but as Chris Dale alluded to, there's not necessarily the kind of efficacious way of getting the right people in the right place at the right time to receive their vaccine. And I think for me, that's the thing that I get a little bit worried about as we think about how do we get this scarce resource to people as quickly as possible without kind of having spoilage, without making mistakes.
Thank you so much, Chris. That makes a lot of sense. And one quick follow-up there. When you're looking at these complex systems, obviously there is a lot of room for, you know, mistakes or unforeseen things happen, the extra variables. What do you think for healthcare leaders, hospital health systems, CEOs, or other leaders in the system today, what do you think would be one thing that they should do right now or consider implementing to make sure that they're in a spot where they can, you know, really eliminate or limit some of these potential errors going forward?
You know, this is Chris Dale. You know, I'd be really interested in what Chris Clifield thinks about this, because the tight coupling is, I was pondering that, you know, Chris, as you were talking, one of the things that we have been messaging to our caregivers internally and to our leaders and to, you know, the local health jurisdictions and even to the state is there's going to be imperfection. You know, what we're trying to do, like Washington State yesterday released its 1B guidance, which has four different tiers in it. And it's, I mean, it's complicated. Like, you know, if you live in a, if you're over the age of 70, you're in tier one, 1B1. And if you live in a multi-generational household and you're over the age of 50, you're tier 1B1 as well. Like it's very, these are very difficult things to try and interpret and then implement. And so we've tried to give ourselves a bit of grace. Like that's the language we've been using internally. It's like give ourselves some grace and acknowledge the imperfections of it. And I wonder if that's like a strategy that we kind of unwittingly at some degree are using to kind of decrease the tight coupling and say, well, what are the essential things? Like, you know, we got to make sure that people get the right, like if you have a Pfizer dose for the first one, you know, 21 days plus or minus four later, you need to get a Pfizer dose for the second one. And so we've taken great pains to like label Pfizer stuff in our internal materials, like in blue, like with blue banners and blue ink and stuff like that. So we know that Pfizer is blue and Moderna is red. And we're being very clear about that. But for some other things about, you know, maybe the, you know, which people are in which tier, like we're still trying to get that right, but we're trying to like decrease some of the tight coupling. I don't know if that's the right way to think about it or not, in terms of some of the things we can make a little bit more loose. And so trying to triage those, I don't know, Chris, if you have thoughts about that, but that's how we've been approaching some of this complexity.
I think that's spot on, Chris Dale. And I think that the really what you're talking about is increasing your kind of tolerance in this system. And I think that is a really important thing. I also think, so one of the antidotes to complexity is not simplicity. We can't inject that in the system. That can be really hard, but it's transparency. And I think that, you know, the red and blue thing is such a great example of that. Like from a kind of design thinking perspective, like what are the ways that you can inject transparency in your system? You know, maybe physically you're giving the Moderna vaccine in one location and you're giving the Pfizer vaccine in another location, and the kind of never the twain shall meet, right? So the more transparency you can inject in the system, I think the better off you are. I think you've also, Chris Dale, done a good job of identifying kind of like what are your actual worst case scenarios, right? Like somebody getting one, you know, the kind of initial dose of the Pfizer and then the second dose of the Moderna, like that's not a good scenario, right? You've wasted resources, you've left people unprotected, and it might be something that takes you a long time to detect. And so that's a really good example of just thinking about like, what are our actual kind of non-negotiables here, right? What are the actual things that we know we can't get wrong and we don't get wrong? And how do we build a system to just cover that kind of minimal set of risks so we kind of increase our overall quality, we reduce our risk in that way? I think there's a little bit of a broader lesson, and I just want to zoom out for a second, which is, you know, the other thing I would talk about, I counsel leaders on is near misses. You've really got to track and understand near misses. And there is a cultural technology that kind of underlies that, and that you need people to be candid about what they're seeing, about mistakes that they make. But even kind of beyond that, you've got to have a system for really learning from the things that almost go wrong, but don't have a big effect, because that's the way that you're going to figure out that, oh, here's where we might have had an unexpected interaction. Here's where we might have had an unexpected risk in the system, but we were able to catch that mistake and then build out our system to handle it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. That is really fascinating to think about. And thank you both so much. Before we wrap up here, Dr. Dale, do you have a piece of advice or two for emerging leaders that you would like to share?
Well, actually kind of riffing on what Chris was just saying about the about learning from near misses. I think there's a nugget there that I think is really, really hard. Because it requires this like neuroplasticity to simultaneously want things to be perfect and relentlessly say, you know, like if we're talking about like, you know, colon cancer screening rates, well, if best in class is like 82%, we want all of our clinics at 82%. And as a leader, you want to be kind of like dogmatic about excellence. Like we are going to be the best, and we're going to, you know, we're not satisfied with anything less than that. We're going to strive to that. But the neuroplasticity part, or just the organizational flexibility and our thinking agility, needs to be around simultaneously like leaning into imperfections, not because they're evil or bad, but because they can help us get to perfection. And I, one of the things that I see organizations kind of getting trapped in, and you know, we're no different, is like, we want to be perfect. And so if we become kind of intolerant of reporting of error, we deprive ourselves of the opportunity to learn and to grow and to develop so that we become more perfect. And it's like, you kind of have to exist in this, I don't know, it's duality. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but it's like, you got to have two sides of your brain at the same time functioning, which I think is really hard.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And thank you so much, Dr. Dale and Chris. I really appreciate you being here today. This has been a really fascinating conversation, and I look forward to connecting with you both again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. And thanks also to Chris Dale for kind of including me in this work. It's been really interesting to be a part of kind of thinking about this with you. And Laura, if I could, I just want to send people to my website, which I know is a little promotionally, but I write about this stuff all the time. And if people have found this conversation interesting, then my writing and podcast and book can be found at chrisclearfield.com.